Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So continuing my coverage from Venice Immersive 2025, today's episode is about a piece called Less Than 5 Grams of Saffron. So this is a part of the competition and actually ended up winning the second place prize overall of all the different pieces at Venice Immersive. And this piece is only 7 minutes long. And so in terms of like the amount of emotion and intensity of a story that can be shown so poetically in such a brief amount of time, it's a piece that really has stuck with me. It's really quite a remarkable achievement. And so this piece is about the experience of being a refugee and using saffron as a spice, because the main character is a young Iranian immigrant who came here illegally and in the process of coming here experienced a traumatic event where she survives a tragic drowning that took her family while traveling illegally by boat. So as she's cooking with saffron, and again, this is all like quill illustration, and so it's kind of like seamlessly moving from scene to scene. There's no dialogue, no script. It's all kind of like this music video, but I think the quintessential example of spatial storytelling. And so as the main character eats the saffron, all these memories come flooding back. And so you're basically juxtaposing between the present moment and all these kind of memories from the past and the traumas of the past that are all flooding in all at once, and that kind of juxtaposing between those two. So the main contextual domains that are being explored here is both the experience of being a refugee, a stranger in a strange land. It takes place in a new home far away from home, whose memory of the family who died, it's all brought back through this embodied experience of food and the spice of saffron. And so here's a quote that describes the piece. It says, quote, "The project evokes our capacity to identify profoundly with a survivor by placing her in a universally familiar of preparing a meal." And so the main center of gravity of this piece is the earth element, because it is so much driven by the spatial storytelling. And talking to Nagar and Gwendolyn, basically Nagar did not write a script at all. It was basically all put together through a spatial expression of meaning through a juxtaposition of all these spatial metaphors together in a way that was able to construct the story. So it wasn't script driven. It was more spatial architecture and driven by being able to use the pure expression of the spatial storytelling. So I see it as a kind of a quintessential and paradigmatic example of spatial storytelling in a way that pushed it to its logical extreme. And you're taking through a number of different immersive and spatial contexts through these spatial transitions and edits. And it's also switching between the third person and first person. So you're mostly seeing from third person, but there are these moments when you're cooking that you start to switch into the first person embodiment, and you get to step into feeling like you're also cooking, but then as you smell the different spices within the context of the piece, then it kind of blasts you out into these more third-person perspectives of the past. Or maybe they're first-person. I don't quite remember the delineation between what's first-person and third-person. I know that they're kind of switching back and forth. And so the earth is the main center of gravity, this kind of embodied spatial storytelling. The second center of gravity, I'd say, is the water element in terms of how much the music is tied together and to be able to really give this soundtrack and the rhythm and the pacing of this story that is unfolding in just an incredible way. And so it feels like you're kind of living through this lucid dream. It's very dynamic, very poetic, and it's cut to the music. So it feels like a little bit of like a music video as you're watching it. And some really elegant spatial transitions and powerful moments that use these spatial metaphors that are just very visceral and moving as you see it all juxtaposed together. And the piece very much relies upon flashbacks and memories and traumatic moments of escaping these authoritarian contexts. And so you're in the moment and you're going back and forth between the past. And so it's kind of a reckoning of these memories of the past and the moment and seamlessly blending together of those two realms of the past and just how much of the past is in the present moment. So you start off in this mundane context of a kitchen from the first person point of view, and then upon smelling this saffron spice, and immediately you're blasted out and transported into these violent memories as a refugee facing the death of your family and loved ones and all the various traumas that are associated with that. So like I said, it's like a 7-minute piece. It's very brief, but very short and sweet and really to the point. I'd say the third center of gravity is the air element. And it's a little bit of this, you know, piecing together the dream logic and reading the grammar of the spatial storytelling and being able to kind of discern the meaning out of that. And I think the fact that it ended up winning the second place prize, I think is a testament to how powerful they were able to do that. So yeah, just a really powerful juxtaposition of these visual and spatial storytelling languages and really pushing forward the grammar of immersive and spatial storytelling. That's very, very powerfully done. In terms of fire element, there's no narrative agency, no embodied interactions. It's basically you're receiving this transmission from this quill animation. So some of the different archetypal themes and character that's being explored is everything from connections to flavors and smells of food and memory, but also this sadness, harshness, limitations, constraints, but also this kind of sudden unexpected traumas that are coming into your psyche without being asked, but just kind of like showing up like a lightning bolt from the past. And there's a quote from the description. It says, quote, "She never expected that this moment would plunge her back into the most dramatic events of her life." So we're covering all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Nagar and Gwendolyn happened on Saturday, August 30th, 2025 at Venice Immersive in Venice, Italy. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Okay, I'm Nagar Mutavalli, or Mutavalli Meydanshah is so difficult. But I'm director of Less Than 5 Gram of Saffron. It's a VR experience, and it's the first animation that I made so far on VR.
Hi, I'm Gonaëlle Clovert. I'm a XR producer, but I come from the cinema industry from a long time ago, and I produced Less Than 5 Gram of Saffron from Nagar.
Great. Maybe you could each give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
So, first of all, I'm 38, if I want to be precise, and I'm from Iran. And actually, my project is about how I moved to Europe for a study opportunity. So I studied, my bachelor is art, but I studied in Iran. And then I decided to just continue studying as for animation part for my master in Europe. So I was Erasmus student, and I went first to Belgium, and then Finland, and then Portugal. And it was quite great, but it was exhausting also, because I was Erasmus, so I have to pack everything and go everywhere. So yeah, so this is the thing that I did so far, and if you need more, I can say.
Yeah, just a quick follow-on is when did virtual reality or immersive technologies come on to your radar as something that you wanted to explore as a part of your artistic practice?
So my background is on 2D animation more, and I introduced myself as a like illustrator more. But the thing is, I made some animation on 2D screen. And when I started my master, I started to work on 2D. But then when I was in Finland, I just saw the technology of VR, and I was amazed because it gives the power of being inside of the experience. So it was really powerful for me. So I started to explore a bit more, and I explored some softwares. And the software that I really love to work with, it was Quill, because it's like Photoshop. Like, as a 2D person, for me, it was really easy to handle. It's not like a 3D that you have to know about technology stuff and numbers. So for me, it was really quite good. So I started to work on VR.
And I'm much more coming from, as you said before, from cinema industry, from storytelling, and storytelling in documentaries also. And I created my own company in 2011, 10-to-10 Film in Paris, in France. But I was always asking myself about a new way to tell story. So I was involved in a project, and I follow also a training with Michel Rayac a long time ago. And he was working as a coach in transmedia and then in virtual reality. And I was one of his students. And I completely immersed myself in this industry, in this storytelling, in the people who were working at the beginning, discovering a new way to tell story. And it's how I came in XR.
And then maybe you could, one of you, tell the story of how you met each other in order to collaborate on this project.
We met each other 3 years ago because I'm still working on a production of 369. Is an immersive experience, interactive, about female sexuality. And we were selected to present the project to the Pitch MIFA in Annecy. And we were presenting and pitching the project in the same time than Nagar with Less Than 5 Gram of Saffron, and we were both very interested in each other by the project, and I met her there, and It was one of the best gifts after the fact that we won the prize of the best pitch in MIFA with my project 369. And I had another gift. It was to meet her and to work with her after.
So the thing that happened, like every project, like there was 7 projects, and for each project there was like maybe more than 2 people, like even 4, and most of them or all of them as a producer I didn't have, and I was the only one that I was in the stage, and I, in the middle of my pitching, I was like burst into tears and it's like shaking and it was so funny. But then I saw Gwen and I was so relaxed that okay, finally there is someone else with me, and I was so happy then.
But it was a long process and a long journey after that, because she lives very far away. Yes, you were not so close and it was difficult to reach you. You were a little bit still in Tehran at that time. So it took us quite 6-7 months to keep in touch, to exchange, to speak about the project and to sign the contracts.
Nice. And so, yeah, the Less Than 5 Grams of Saffron, it's like a animated story of immigration, exile, feeling disconnected from your land. And so maybe you could start with, where did you begin with trying to tell the story? Maybe Saffron is a good place to start in terms of like describing Saffron and how that is connected to so many aspects of the aesthetics of the piece, but also the themes of the piece.
Okay, so it's a longer story actually, because when I went to Belgium, in the beginning I was so anxious and I experienced some anxiety attack and panic attacks. And then like I remember that I couldn't go out because I didn't know how to wear even clothes, because like we have to use a scarf and something like long shirts in Iran. So even like I'm from open family, I couldn't like wear things, and I was like, what should I do? Is like I don't know, like is this too much? Is it or is not that much? So I felt like I have to stay home in my room. So I was homesick at that time. And then when I started to talk with my colleagues, so they didn't get what I'm talking about. So it was so sad that they didn't understand my feelings exactly. So, yes. And then we have to start writing something. And I was so confused and I didn't know how to start. So also I had a story for my MA. But the thing was like I was thinking if I make that animation, I cannot go back to my country because maybe they arrest me or something like that. So I changed my mind on my story. So I didn't have any story, and I have to have a story for my master. And then I couldn't walk, I couldn't talk, I was no one there, you know. So the thing was, my roommates helped me to get better. Like, they were from Georgia, and they were so nice to me. So they started to talk with me that make your room the way that you had before, change the lights, or buy something for your room, but nothing was working. So I was searching for a tool or a smell or whatever to just help me to get better and feel like home a bit. And I brought some saffron, of course. And then when I started cooking...
That's a big emotion.
Wait. Sorry. So when I started cooking, I felt like how far am I from my home instead of feeling being happy. So that's the point that I make the animation about the saffron. So it gives like I'm far away from my home. Also, is the smell of our cuisines. So it was difficult at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you could describe a little bit about saffron and why is it so important to you and your family and the culture.
Because we export saffron, like everyone knows that saffron is from Iran. Mostly, like they export a lot of saffron, and because it has a really, the thing that I use the saffron is for two ways. One is because like we use saffron I mean, seasoning our food with saffron a lot. Like, in a lot of our cuisine, we use it. But the thing was, like, if you just use a small amount of saffron when you want to, you have to make it beforehand and then add it to your cuisine. So even you put, like, just some small stigmas in the water and ice, it will be reddish. Like, it's like you can have a lot of red and also smelly water, I don't know, juice or something like that. So, yeah, so it has a really big impact, yeah.
And also it's really using as a medicine for depression.
Yes.
I know because I talk some.
Yeah.
One day. So.
Yeah, and I love in the film the moments where the character, you kind of switch between first person and third person in the film, right?
Actually, it's like you cannot switch it, but when you're watching, you will switch. Like, in the beginning, you're watching everything as a viewer, like everything is like in theater, but then you become the person. Yeah, gradually you become the person.
Yeah, it starts from like third person, you're watching it, but then you're embodying it in the first person. And also, the style of the piece felt like there's a lot of really amazing transitions, like moving from one scene to the next. And so it felt very fluid just in how you were putting it together and the grammar of the spatial media, I felt was really innovative in the way that you're cutting between the scenes. But there was one scene that I remember where the smelling of the saffron, and then as soon as the smells come in, then all of the memories and associations come up of family and home. And so it also was catalyzing a lot of memories just now talking about it. Just wondering if you could elaborate on the association of saffron with home and memory and all this emotion that's coming up.
Yeah, it's true, but you said everything, so what should I add, you know?
Yeah, just any, what was coming up for you when you were just a few moments ago, the emotions. You're talking about it in the piece, but just trying to situate if it's in the past or if it's in the present, you know.
Okay, so the thing is, like, when I got married in Tehran, I just left after 2 months, so I had a dog, and I really miss all, like, my husband, my family, also my dog a lot. Like, it was the first time that I traveled to Europe, and then I didn't know how far I have to go, you know, and usually the thing that happened to me a lot, it was like, I just Google map my home, and I was thinking how I can go back. I just needed someone to just pick me like a god and take me and drop it in Tehran in my home. So for me, it was really difficult, like, to think about, like, I was like a mom for my dog and I just left him, you know. I felt like embarrassed a lot. So, yeah, everything, but also my family. But more, if I want to say, it was my dog was the first thing, that because I live with him like for 8 years and then that's it, he's not there and nothing, and I don't know how is it, so it was so sad. And then my of course my husband.
But it was it was a production was we were always following also the Negar situation, you know. So it was first how she was, what was the situation, and it was never the same. And then how we can find a way to work and to go forwards on a project. And what you didn't say so much is you worked a lot on your side on Quill. Quill is you can maybe develop a little bit this software and the animation that you work on it, because I had to find somebody, your second hand, you know, in France or wherever in Europe to work with you, you know, on Quill. And that was not so easy to find for me. And we met Amaury Campion from Gepetto Studio in Paris. And he was the great dancer partner of this project, too. So, voilà. So maybe explain a little bit Quill. I don't know.
So the thing is, like, the software that I use is like for Meta, but now they are not developing it anymore. But because it's so easy to work, It's not that easy, but again, for me it was easy, but it's more happening in America and United States, something like that. So I was searching for someone to work on Quill, to work with me too. And then when I met Gwen, I just found out that there's a guy that his name is Amori and he's going to work with me, so I was happy. And then I didn't know who is he. And then when we were done with the project, and I just searched his name on the internet and I found out that he's one of the people that I love his works and he's director, and I was like shocked how...
You know, before I sent you all this information before, you know?
Yes, but because of language maybe, sorry. But I was like shocked and I just called, or I don't remember exactly, I messaged to Amori and I said that, are you owner of Studio Geppetto? And he said, yes. Have you made this animation? He said, yes. And I was like, how this famous person can work with me?
So you discover all of it at the credits moment, you know, when we were doing the credits.
Okay. So, yeah, it was really amazing to work with these people.
We had to work with Unity Studio as well because we need an APK that we can't have with a Quill. So we worked with Studio Manette in Lyon. And that was great too, Michael Bolifer. It was a good team.
Yeah. And so it sounds like you're coming from an animation background and doing a lot of the initial work and with help and support from Studio Geppetto. But where did you begin in telling this story? Did you write a script or were you building out the scenes? I'm just curious to hear your process of how it all came together.
Okay, so the problem was that I'm not a writing person at all, and I told you that I'm more like illustrator, so I started to drawing the pieces that I was thinking, mostly because of the point of view that I wanted to see, and I couldn't write it, you know. It was hard to talk about when you have 360 degrees and then how you can manage everything, so I prefer to just have visual stuff. And then also I didn't have the headset, unfortunately. At that moment I was in Portugal, so I started to drawing everything and I just imagine everything. If I put the headset, how it will be. So, and then I started to just drawing some parts. Mostly I started working on a storyboard and the color sheet, both at the same time, so they were parallel. And then I started to working on both sides because colors has a lot of meaning for me. So and I wanted to, everything starts from a bluish color because I just wanted to show that everything is okay-ish, but it's not. The okay part is just on the surface, but in the depth, it's, everything is depressing. So I use blue. And then I wanted to gradually change the color to red, so that's the point that I started to draw everything. So it started with the storyboard, not the writing part. And actually I tried but I couldn't. and then I started to complete my color sheet, and then I started to making the characters and etc.
So at what point did you start to write the script? Had you created all of it or?
In fact, she never write a script. The script is a synopsis with two sentences by pages, and that's all. She never, and always that when they ask for a script, I said okay, here, and it's color sheet, you know, sheet, and it's a storyboard, very beautiful, and please just take it like that, and we work on the author intentions, and we rewrite it. You know, a little bit, and we work. It's a good complementarity, you know. Do you remember at first when I told you it's such a great story to, because I was really involved in a project with finding many ideas for interactivity and, you know, with hand strikings. And so I asked Negar and I said, why we don't use interactivity in your project, you know, because Golnaz, she's cooking and each time she's taking a new ingredient, maybe the memories can, you know, open and bad memories comes, or you can really involve the viewer in the way. And so we had a big discussion like that, and I completely understand your point of view. You said that you really want the viewer to have the space in his mind to be emotionally impacted. and she understand that it was maybe not far enough for the industry, XR industry, but in a way she was sure that the emotional involving will be better.
The thing that I have to add when Gwen was talking, I just remember that how it starts in the beginning, that why I didn't write the script, because I had a friend, he's really nice, his name is David Hapchi, so he started to talk with me, and because in the beginning when I was in Belgium, I felt like I have to go back, like I have to quit this, and then he's from Lebanon. And then the funny part was, like, I was with David and we were talking and I was crying again. And then I told him that I want to go back. For me, these things doesn't work. And then he said that, look, after you're finishing this, you have master. And you have the scholarship, so why you're not continuing? And he was the one, the friends that pushed me to stay there. So he started to talk with me, to relax me. And he also mentioned Saffron a lot for me. Like, what do you feel better with? What things, like, or which food makes you better? We can go to any Iranian restaurant, or if I can help you. So when we were talking, like a friend, as a friend together, slightly the idea became on the top of the surface. So we started to think, okay, the problem that I have is anxiety. So how I can solve it with smells, or with, I don't know, something like to just remind me of home or something like that. And then it's gradually completed. And then when we were talking, we just starting to just write some sentences, but mostly the pictures. So the pictures help us to just manage everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw, I think maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks ago now, that I got an early build. And so, and I've since watched around 30 hours of stuff. And so I'm trying to remember, I have memories of a narration, but maybe it was just all from my head in terms of interpreting. Is there anybody speaking at all? Okay, it's all visual storytelling.
Yeah, it's all in your mind.
Okay. A pure visual storytelling. Okay, yeah. I think it was really, I mean, I think it was so clear as to the story you were telling that maybe it's like my memory of it is associations. But yeah, I think I was just really struck now that you mentioned that, just how much of leaning into the visual storytelling that you're able to tell without having to explain anything, just the associations that you're able to make. That was really quite powerful. I did want to focus on a little bit of the red motif, because, you know, you have the saffron and then allusions to like rooms being filled with blood and almost this somewhat claustrophobic, like being trapped in a bathroom with water / blood rising, and a metaphor for experiences of exile, violence, trauma. So just curious to hear you elaborate on the use of red as connected to saffron, but also blood and all the other kind of metaphors you were using for violence or exile or trauma. Yeah, so that
It's against woman. It's a violence against woman too. It's a symbol of the woman. It's Golnaz. It's inside, and she's, you know, and submerged by the violence that she have been going through. But against, we are talking about female immigration also, you know, and talking about woman condition also.
Yeah. So the thing that I can tell you, because like it's happening from my inside, so I cannot describe everything. But the thing, like, when I was making the animation, I felt like I told you about the saffron. But what the part of blood is, because I research a lot and I talk with a lot of Afghan people, mostly who were immigrants. So I talk with them, and they had a really bad background, because mostly they used the boat to go to Greek or somewhere else. Or even I heard a lot of a story about the people who are running in the jungle and they shot by the guards or something like that, or even they cannot continue the journey. And it's, I don't know, in other countries call it, but in Iran call it like game, even in Turkey. So that game is so strange for me, and it's like it's just combined with the blood for me. Like, it's dying. Like, it's just a lot of wounds will happen after the gaming, you know. So I was thinking that also, the, for example, the thing that will happen, I mean, it happened to the Golnaz, for example, his father has been shot with, by the police. So again, blood, like it, this is like disaster, you know, like you lost your father by a shot, an accidentally shot, and that's it. And the thing that, again, happening to her mother and his brother and even the people who were in the boat, so the story is combined. So also I told you, when I told you about saffron, that gives the sense of home, also anxiety. So I just used that too in my story, like in this way. Yeah.
Yeah, really, really powerful, really well done, and just was quite moving to watch, and also gave me this visceral experience of watching it. I don't think I would have had the same experience had I watched like a 2D version of it as a short film, because you do switch between third person and first person, but also have these really visceral experiences that connect to the trauma and violence themes that are symbolic in a way, that are creating one layer of separation of the metaphor, but still found it really quite powerful to be put into the scene in that way. So just curious to hear any reflections on, you know, working in 2D versus 3D and what you're able to do within VR that may not translate as well if you were just to show it on a 2D frame on a TV. So being immersed in VR.
So it was the thing that me and Gwen think about that. We still are thinking about that. But the way when you put the headset is completely different, because you are in, you feel like you are the first person, or Golnaz, the protagonist, that how does she feel, you know? So because of that, I feel like VR still is the best tool, but maybe later on, 2D.
But in the with a longer version,
yeah, exactly.
she wants to tell more memories, more story about this situation, this kind of characters, this female immigrant from Iran. So it will be a longer story and, voilà, and more developed with the script this time.
I think she did really quite well without a script in this one, so...
We need script to finance, you know, sometimes, unfortunately. But in animation, it's another story, so it's good that you know how to draw by yourself as well, you know, like very well drawing.
Yeah, so it sounds like that a lot of this project was a bit of a solo project in a lot of ways, but also very collaborative in a way that as a producer, you're bringing in other people. And so just curious to hear from your perspective, Gwen, as you're coming in on this project and helping to bring it to fruition, like what it was like for you to be a producer and try to figure out what the project needed to come to completion.
It's what you said. It's to try to figure out what the project needs and how to help. In fact, because when I saw her on a stage alone, that's true, and telling this crazy, amazing, moving story, the first things that I had in my mind is I want to help this woman, you know, this girl, and I want to be on her side to help her to tell her story and to tell the story of millions of people. So voilà, so we, after just an adjustment, she was a lot in advance in her project. She knew really well where she wanted to go. So it's not to be so much intrusive and to say, oh, you should change. You know, it's really to respect her work and try to just add more perspective, more talents around her, and to understand also what was the problem, to adapt it. We had to redo a lot of things, like we were close to lose the music, but fortunately we keep the music, and you know, because she already had the amazing Iranian composer. And because the music in this film, the sound, it's very important, and that was a big part of the production, post-production stage, in fact. So how to say more, really depends of the director, but for this project it was really side by side with her, as I said, in function of her situation, and to give the best person at the best moment for her and for the project.
I'd love to hear a little bit more around the music and what kind of direction you were giving to the composer, or, you know, working with, because I feel like that was a big part of the emotional experience of the piece was the score and, you know, the visuals were very alluring and striking, but I think the music can help ground my feelings into the overall experience. But yeah, I'd love to hear any other comments on working with the composer and the music.
So I was so fortunate because I have a friend, which he's famous in Iran. So his name is Kian Purtorov. So I asked him if he wants to come work with me or not, and he said yes. It's money-wise, so it's okay. And then we started to working, but it was so funny that when he started working, he really understood what I mean. Like, even in the beginning, I remember when he sent the music to me, second time that he edits everything was perfect for me. And I said, yes, this is the thing that I wanted to, because he fully understand the thing that I wanted. So it was like I wanted to have like Western music for the part that is everything is bluish. And for the reddish part, I wanted to have Iranian music. And I didn't want it to be like a traditional music that we have, but I wanted to have just some effects of like traditional music, Iranian music. So although he is progressive rock musician, but he started to work on it and it was really good and it really works. So sometimes when even I hear his music without my animation, I can cry easily, you know, like it's really goes to your heart and you feel the power of the musician in that case. So yeah, it was so easy for me to work with an Iranian composer. Also, we have a French composer, maybe Gwen can...
Nocturne Studio from France in Lyon works on it in a sound design and a piece of music. But the funny thing that I remember when we were in the sound design, it was that we were putting additional sound on, for example, the crying baby on a boat. And that was surprising for me because I didn't remember to have this kind of conversation about that with another directors when I work with foreign country. But she was telling them that the baby doesn't cry like an Iranian baby, you know. It's not the same cry. I want the cry of an Iranian baby. And we were like, okay, how we do that, you know. And it was the same for, I don't know which sound was not like in Iran. In Tehran. So you ask your husband to make some sound there, you know, to be just exactly what you really want. So you see, and it's important because it's a respectful for, you know, so she really wants to be precise. And I think it's that. These films reflect that also.
So in a way that it was in the boat, the scene that Gwen is mentioning is in the boat. So the baby was like crying, like a really cute baby, European one. but usually like Middle East baby like shouting like ah. So yeah, we changed that one also for the part that I asked my husband. It was like I was begging him to just say something because he was embarrassed and he didn't want to like record his sound. And we had a really big fight over just for one word to please say something in Farsi. And it was for him was really hard, but he did it anyway. He did the best. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's something around in virtual reality. It's often like walking into someone's dream and being able to see how symbols and metaphors are used that can be very personal, but it can also be very universal and allow the symbols and metaphors to connect to the universal experience of exile, refugees, escaping, running from violence. So I feel like this piece is able to tap into a lot of those universal archetypes that make it clear what the story is about. But love if you have any other additional comments on the immigrant experience, but also refugees escaping violence. And sometimes in stories, if you are telling a very personal story, sometimes it could be too specific, too contextual. And I feel like that the way that you're telling the story with the metaphors, you're able to go beyond just the specificity of an individual, but really connect to a collective story.
Okay, so when I was talking with David about like immigranting and saffron, so we were thinking about what if we have a sea, a reddish sea, like a blood. We can have like a sea with a fully blood. And then we were thinking, what should we do? And then gradually it happens that we have to go to the immigrants and ask them, what is their story? And then I couldn't find like specific people, so I started to drawing everything. So I can say somehow the script was almost finished. But suddenly I found Afghan immigrant girl, and it was so like a miracle for me, because her name was Guli, which is like when you want to say Golnaz in the short way, you will call it Guli. And she was as the same as age that my character had, and also she lost his father. But the thing was, like, she immigrants because the uncle of the girl asked her to marry to his son, and she didn't want to. Also, her mother didn't want to. So her mother and took two, like exactly like my story, that took her daughter, Guli, also his brother, his son. And then they took it from Afghanistan, and they flew from Iran, and then they went to Turkey, and then Greek, and now they are in Germany. So I was thinking every time how it can be like surprisingly same as my character. So I use, I mean, I didn't use it specifically this, but again, everything just happened suddenly. That is someone's story, you know? And actually, it can be everyone's story. It doesn't have something special for just Golnaz, is something like this, or it's an artist or something like this, because I'm just telling the event, you know, what is going on Golnaz, you know, as immigrants. So Golnaz can be anyone. It's not about just one person. It's just something that every immigrant, maybe, if they flew by the boat or from the jungle or have a game or something like that, would experience exactly these things.
That's why you wanted to add at the beginning, million flee, not for a better life, but just for survive. So it was this, not to give, you have to, you know, we don't want to be, ask the viewer to give them the meaning of the project, but you wanted to make it, to be sure that, you know, you make the story universal. We can speak about many, many, many countries and many people's situations. And it's funny because when you were talking, I was like, but nobody knows that Golnaz is the name of the character. Because it's a no dialogue films, you know, nobody knows that we call her Golnaz between us, but it's just between us, you know. The young...
Yeah, there's a lot of poetic qualities to the piece where I feel like it's leaning into the grammar of VR in a way that feels very dreamlike. I'm just curious if you have any other influences from film or from your own dreams or the emerging grammar of virtual reality. Amazing transitions from going one scene to the next and finding ways of doing cuts that go above and beyond what you would do in film, but having objects go in front of the camera. So, yeah, I'm just curious to hear any reflections on the...
The very surprising thing, it's Negar is a newborn baby in the VR, you know, in the XR. And it came very intuitively for you. You really know where to put the camera and how to shoot the situation, the emotional of the character. And it was intuitive, really. Wow, surprising. We didn't talk so much about reference, and it was like a flu coming out of you.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think that much. Yeah, sometimes I think artists are like this, or like everyone, but it's not the thing that I was thinking. But when you were talking about the transitions, for example, the part that was really important for me, because I wanted to, just one part that I really think about that part, was the part that the mother was drowning and she was searching for her kids. And then I wanted to just have a sound of like clogging ears when it's going to the depth of the water, because I wanted to feel like it's nothing, like it's dying, it's nothing is there. So about the other parts, it just happened intuitively.
Yeah, totally understand. Yeah, so what's next for less than 5 grams of saffron? Where do you go from here?
Okay, it's a really hard question because so now my situation is not good because of war and happening in Iran and everything. So like each day is me and my husband are thinking, what should we do? Like, what is the next step? And also is like, we love our country, so we don't know what should we do. So mostly, like I can say, even like 70% of my mind is just confusing every day that what should we do. But then I try to like maybe do meditation for myself, just to making art or write a story or something. So I'm thinking about just writing another one, and I just started just before, a month before I just come here to Venice Festival. So we are thinking to just make it and let's see what will happen.
The fact it's a project, so less than 5 grams of saffron, have been selected first in Annecy, and it was great because it was the beginning of the story between us as producer and director, and we were there. We share, because of a lot of money, so we share the bedrooms, and in the morning of the Thursday morning, she woke up and I was asleep, and she was crying. And in fact, the bomb was falling in Tehran, and we were in Annecy, and it was just a dream. I mean, to be in Annecy, it was a dream before we knew that we would be here, and it was just a nightmare coming, you know. And and it was just like going to the film, you know, entering in your movie, you know, in a way, in your film. And and voila, and you had to go back, and it was so difficult. So we are in a process to be in life, to be in the present, try to have project again together, but just to see how it's going to be for the next months, you know. And enjoying to be here, because it's such a big happiness for us to be here in Venice.
Yeah, well, congratulations for making it into Venice and making it here. I'm glad that you're here. We can have a chat about it. Have you been able to see any other projects while you're here?
Not so far, not that many, because I was a bit stressed before the festival, so I didn't book anything.
But now,
so just friends are helping me to watch some. So I haven't to participate all of it, but some of it, but it's really good. It's really great.
Awesome. And finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality and immersive storytelling, and what it might be able to enable? So where all of this combination of storytelling and XR might go here in the future?
Maybe Gwen can answer you better, because I don't know.
I think there is still enormous, and when I see everything, all the experience here, it's a big, big, big potential. And it's a world where I want to be for a long, long, long time. I hope I answer to your question, but I think it's just a dream life to be able to see all these talents and works and experience. So, I hope a long, long time. We have many stories to tell, and in many ways. And this is the best way to say.
Anything in VR that you want to experience? Any topics that you want to see?
So the thing that I have to inform you is about that in Iran we cannot use VR because you have to have VPN on your router, and sometimes it's not working, so I don't know about the other project, but usually I just see the 2D version, so it's fine for me still. Let's see.
Why I didn't buy and send or whatever a headset for her to work, because she couldn't receive it anyway. So this is a question too, you know.
So were you outside of the country of Iran when you were seeing it, or how did you make it in Quill?
So I told you that when I was doing my master, I just started to working on Quill, and I had the opportunity to work on it. And then, but I have a residency card fortunately. Happy, thank you, Europe. And then I'm going back and forth to Vienna and Iran.
To test the build and to come back and to test the build and to come back.
And usually it's happened like I just update my VR and my headset and then go back to Iran to use it. But the good thing is Quill, you can have it on your PC. So sometimes you don't need VPN, but when you want to play someone else's experience, you cannot, you know? So you have to go to Europe to watch something and then.
So take advantage to be here to watch as much as you can, you know? It's like, the dreamy world, I told you.
So again, we have to go to back my story.
Is there anything else left unsaid? Any final thoughts you have for the broader immersive community?
Nothing special. No, I don't have anything. Thanks to them.
No, it's always a big pleasure to see all of you and to share this moment and inside rooms and outside enjoying Venice with you. And thank you, Kent, for all of it.
Yeah, thank you both for joining me here on the podcast. Less than 5 grams of saffron. It's a really beautiful, poetic piece of visual storytelling, a really powerful piece that's short and sweet in a way that is able to say a lot with not a lot of time, just the way that you're able to transport us into your world, your experiences. Yeah, just really quite powerful piece. So yeah, very much enjoyed it. And thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for tuning into this Venice Immersive 2025 coverage. And hopefully you found some use in some of this documentation of these experiences that are very ephemeral. And some of these show at these festivals and they don't really go out widely beyond this a lot of times. I mean, maybe they are, but you may not be in a place that it's easy for you to see them. And so it's a real privilege to be able to see all these experiences, but also to be able to sit down with these creators and have a really deep in-depth conversation in a way that there are not a lot of other opportunities to really dig into at this level. And so I really appreciate all the time from all the creators to be able to have these conversations, but also for you to take the time to listen to them. And also it's been a challenge of trying to find a way of speaking about these experiences in an abstract, theoretical way, or at least in a way that I can ground it in, allow you to put yourself into the experiences to kind of imagine some of these different things that they're doing, how I'm experiencing it, but also the different types of design decisions that the creator is making. So if you find this useful and want to support this type of effort of both documenting the history of immersive storytelling, but also to support this kind of wildly ambitious independent journalism project that is very much driven by support by listeners like yourself. So please do consider becoming a member of the Patreon at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening. Thank you.